Good morning. You've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Chris Bessler this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And we are joined as well by the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader, Zach Hagedon, back in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. We have, it's election season. It's Friday, October 11th. And there's much to discuss. I'll run down the headlines. The big one, I think, in both in our local media is about the update on Albany Falls Dam that arrived on October 7th. Colonel Catherine Sanborn of the Army Corps of Engineers addressed a audience at the Ponderay Event Center and suggested that repairs to the Albany Falls Dam, which controls the water level of Lake Ponderay, repairs may take years, up to four and up to 10 years was the possible time frame laid out by the Army Corps. A high estimate to some minds, and higher than I think many were expecting. Governor Little responded by a strongly worded letter. Zach, you wrote the piece on that, and we'll discuss that in just a moment. Speaking of the lake, Trestle Creek, the proposed marina that the Idaho Club has proposed, is the comment period is closed for the Idaho Department of Lands, and that department could issue a ruling by mid-November on whether Trestle Creek Marina that is proposed by the Idaho Club can be constructed. The Lake Ponderay School District, the board approved some new facility contracts and policies for the school year. The Idaho Department of Transportation will host a public meeting on October 16th regarding the Dufert and Highway 95 interchange that has been a topic of debate around here for years now. And we will see if anybody's got any new ideas at a public meeting on October 16th. The day before that October 16th meeting is October 15th, and there will be another candidates forum hosted this time by The Reader and KRFY and Sandpoint Online, with all the candidates for local office who are in contested races, and including a conversation about Proposition 1 on the ballot. And you can tune in right here to 88.5 KRFY if you want to listen to it. Starts at 5:30, or you can go in person to Sandpoint High School. That is October 15th, which is next
Tuesday.
All right. That's the new news of the week that caught my eye, at least in this paper and in the Daily Bee. Did I miss any big important items that you saw there, Chris?
I think you hit the big ones there, but we should mention that the Carousel of Smiles,
that was a cool story.
They're going to be moving into their new home in the site of the former Bazaar this Saturday. So people want to see the ponies make a transit to this new space where the carousel will eventually, not that far off now, probably go into operation. They're going to be moving, I think, at 12:30 on Saturday. And another kind of good news story was that the Kinnexu Land Trust completed the purchase of the Sled Hill. It was a $1.9 million purchase. They'd announced they had raised the money, but this makes it official now. So that is in the Land Trust. They own it now, and they'll be opening it up. It'll be a place where people can go with their families and do some fun sliding, and it won't cost anything.
Yeah, that is going to be cool. I made it out there, I think, only once last winter. But, we kind of had slushy winter last
year. Yeah, winter. Who knows what we're going to get this winter either. Right. Although they are predicting we're going to see a La Nina, and where it's going to be possibly cooler and with a little more precipitation than we've been seeing. So fingers crossed for that if you're somebody that likes the snow sports. And I should mention, Jack, did you get outside last night?
To see the Northern Lights, you
yes,
mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a couple nights of, I saw them even
on Monday.
The night before, yeah.
Yeah, Monday they were pretty strong, and then last night they were pretty good. You know, it's kind of funny, you look up, you do see the shimmering stuff going on, the lights moving across. It's not super colorful, but when they're interpreted through our phones, the color really pops.
It is funny how you take a picture and it's like, actually it's more spectacular on the phone
than yes
it, or I mean yeah it kind of it, it's a different experience. Yeah, you see the colors pop on the phone.
Yeah.
Let's talk, Zach, you wrote the piece on the Albany Falls Dam. How was that meeting to witness? Was the crowd kind of how'd they take it, the public who attended the meeting, the Albany Falls Dam update from the Corps of Engineers?
Well, I wasn't able to be there in person, so
okay.
I called in.
Okay.
And didn't
right know, yeah they did, it was hosted on
telephonically
online as well. Yeah.
So I didn't actually see the crowd, but
okay.
Based on the responses that were given during the public testimony, you know, there was a fair amount of frustration. I didn't hear much commentary from anyone saying, like, this sounds good. This
right.
sounds like a
yeah.
a doable timeline. I think a lot of the people that spoke were waterfront property owners, you know, with docks and things.
Yeah.
And they were very dismayed that they might have to wait, you know, upwards of a decade,
mm-hmm.
You know, based on the outward estimate for the lake level to be sort of what they expect it to be. And there was, you know, this concern about safety. You know, the way Colonel Sanborn described it, you know, there's, she talked a little bit about the flaws specifically that are in the gate. Gate number 3 was the one that they identified in the spring as having these sort of steel structural, defects. And the steel used in that gate, you know, is more than 50 or 70 years old. And what they found was that it was like a delamination of the steel, and it gets a little technical, I guess, but, basically it just got really old, and without the lamination on the steel, it was exposed to sort of degradation through just time and use. So cracks and holes and things, pits had developed in it, and that created what they called a rolling flaw throughout the gate. So it bends. You know, it's much more flexible than it should be. There's a ton of pressure on those gates from all that water. So there's concern that if the gate was weakened sufficiently to buckle, you know, it would sort of bend like a piece of paper, I think was the way it was described.
And just fail, like a quick catastrophic failure.
And you would have, you know, I forget exactly, it was 20,000
cubic feet
of water just rushing through all at once, which, you know, sounds very dire. And Colonel Sanborn was pretty clear. He's like, yeah, that sounds horrific, I think was her quote. But it wouldn't be like a wall of water, like a storm surge, you know, that we've all become familiar with like this hurricane season in Florida.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like that. But it would be a noticeable decrease in the lake level at large, probably back down to that winter level if it occurred during the summer. And that, of course, would probably wreak some havoc on docks and boats and, you know, sort of near shore infrastructure. So that's the situation that they're desperately trying to avoid, considering the fact that Albany Falls Dam, when it was built, one of its primary functions is flood control, in addition to recreation. But flood control is one of the biggies. So they want to avoid that. So gate 3 is the priority, it sounds like, being the one that they first found the flaw in. However, subsequent analysis has suggested that all the other gates, and I think there's 11 in total, were all fabricated at the same time, roughly, and so used the same steel. So it stands to reason that they all have the same flaw as well. And going in there and replacing each one of those gates is where we get that sort of up to 10-year timeline. You know, they said it could be 7, could be 10, you know, they were very cagey, but they were very conservative, I guess, in what they could promise to the community about when this project could be concluded. And they emphasized that several times. Like, we don't want to overpromise you. We don't want to say that we can have this all fixed by 2025. So be prepared for this to be an ongoing thing.
So with a slower replacement, it's going to take longer. How are operations of the lake likely to be affected year to year?
Well, it's going to continue on the restricted flow that they've been doing. And they've been doing that, you know, to be as safe as possible about, you know, what they're releasing through the dam, how much they're holding back. What we saw over the past year is probably what we would see going forward until they can get the contractors lined up.
So slower to fill the lake in the spring, hold the lake a little bit lower during the summer, and then it seems like they're letting it out a little slower in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably a safe bet. They didn't get into the nitty-gritties of how they were going to do that specifically, but they did say, you know, restricted operations will continue as the project goes on. And part of the reason for the big delay, or what some people would call the big delay, was, as Colonel Sanborn said, you know, the steel manufacturing industry in the U.S. is not what it was in the 40s and 50s. You know, there aren't a plethora of big companies that can do this, according to her. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of contractors who can handle that giant, you know, amount of work that it takes to bring these huge gates into place and then install them. And I was intrigued by one of the points she made, that when this happens, they're going to effectively be merging two eras of engineering together. Mm-hmm. Because the dam itself, you know, was built in the 1950s, same time as the gates, of course. And things were built different back then. They were, you know, the safety standards were different. The methods of fabrication were different. So if we get, you know, 21st century gates installed in this, you know, sort of mid 20th century infrastructure, that's going to be a challenge too. That reasoning, that didn't really wash with some people, including the governor. Mm-hmm. And the governor's letter that he sent to the U.S. Army Corps, you know, he kind of takes him to task a little bit, saying, like, look, I mean, the U.S. government is the largest contractor on Earth. And if you say you can't find good contractors, you know, like, look to your own government. Mm-hmm. His argument is there's no way that it should take this long. And his concerns were about, you know, the safety aspect. Like, you know, we say that we're running a higher risk of sort of flood with these weakened gates. Mm-hmm. So why run that risk for upwards of 10 years? Why not expedite this? And in addition, you know, why continue to potentially have big impacts on recreation, on people's private property, et cetera? I don't know what the response to that is going to be from the Corps. I mean, we all know how the federal government operates, you know, that has its own schedule and its own procurement policies and things like that. So really what we've got here is, you know, the state, as represented by the governor, sort of at odds with the feds in the form of the Corps. And I've heard from our sort of state lawmakers that they are interested in this issue, and they're going to be probably moving forward with some other recommendations and things in the next week or two. So there will be more, I guess, analysis and insight into this whole issue coming up.
The letter was strongly worded indeed, I would say. I mean, more, you know, the language in that was pretty,
Well, at one point, the governor says, you know, frankly, a process to replace these faulty gates that stretches out years, approaching a decade, is flat unacceptable.
Yeah.
But I don't know what kind of leverage he has, honestly.
Yeah. What can a state governor do? It does seem, I mean, the gates are these complex structures, or are these just basically big sheets of shaped steel? You know, I mean, is this what goes into a dam gate?
Well, I have to remember back to my elementary school field trips to Albany Falls, and from what I recall, it's essentially, I mean, they're giant steel and concrete gates that are on a track, you know, that are raised and lowered as needed.
Yeah,
and you know, I don't have a lot of the specs
Like
how heavy they are and stuff like that. I know that information's out there, and it's probably something we'll get into in more detail as the project goes on. But yeah, they're enormous structures.
Yeah, but it's not like they're huge, but they seem they don't seem that complex to me. I mean, they seem enormous and difficult to move, and certainly difficult to fabricate. But I'd be like, if you could figure out how to do one, you could probably do 11 of the same thing with the same material.
Sort of the pencil on the back of the napkin estimate was, you know, this first gate three, would take probably about 4 years to get fabricated and put in place. But as you're mentioning, you know, like once you do one, the other ones come easier. So then it would be, you know, the other gates coming in 6 month intervals after that.
Yeah.
So it's not like each gate's going to take 4 years, because I mean, we would be here till, you know, the 22nd century, maybe. You're right. They aren't particularly complex pieces of infrastructure. I mean, being built in the 50s, you know, the existing gates don't have a lot of like technology in them.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to put a computer inside of it or anything like that.
But who knows what these new gates would look like? I mean, I don't know if they're going to replicate the exact same design.
Yeah.
Or if they even can.
Yeah.
Or want to.
Hmm.
So we have definitely a lot more time to sort of investigate this issue, it seems to me.
Yeah, it does seem like it. I don't know. Is there anything that we can say like this comes next? Next step is just lake level gets lower and they're working on patching gate 3, I guess.
Yeah, there is going to be a quote-unquote Band-Aid, I forgot to mention.
Right.
On gate 3. It's not like mm-hmm. they're just going to let that sit there with its faults
right.
and pose that kind of risk. There's a polymer patch that they're going to put on gate 3 to shore it up and make sure that it is viable going forward while the replacement's being made.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's just going to be sitting there, you know, with all the weight of... You know, the Lake Pend Oreille Basin leaning on it without any kind of reinforcement.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's the Albany Falls Dam story. We can talk more about the news of this week. We didn't ask you, I think last week was Ron Korn's first meeting as District 3 Commissioner. Right. Have we talked about that with you, Zach? I don't think so.
No.
He's now been seated. How do you find the new county commission to be running?
Well, Sansaray Mitchell, our staff writer, mm-hmm. she did the story on that last week. And mm-hmm. based on what she saw, you know, the mood on the commission is much less acrimonious than mm-hmm. it has been. You know, Commissioner Asia Williams is now the chair of the board of mm-hmm. county commissioners. You know, Commissioner Steve Bradshaw, he declined to run in the primary. So he is, you know, for all mm-hmm. intents and purposes, a lame duck at this point. And her impression of Bradshaw on the board now is that he kind of just lets it happen. We're used to seeing some of these commissioner meetings where everyone's just blowing up at each other and accusations are being made and they're going into executive sessions out of nowhere and like yeah. recesses and things like that. That didn't seem to be in play. The big actions by Chair Williams at that meeting were to try to roll back a lot of the standing rules that former commission chair Luke Ahmet put in place.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Ahmet, you know, he ran in the primary and lost to Ron Korn. And the reason that Korn is on the commission right now, despite the fact that he's a candidate in the November election, is because Ahmet decided to resign his position effective in September. And the way that the rules work with those resignations, as we've talked about in other cases, because we've had a lot of resignations in the local Republican Party over the past month or so,
mm-hmm.
is that the Central Committee selects a replacement or a slate of replacements, sends that to the governor. The governor picks which one that he or she thinks should be the replacement. They get put into that position and serve out the remainder of the term. If they're a candidate in the November election, they will appear as an incumbent, though they're still up for election. So if people mm-hmm. look on their ballot and they see Ron Korn, commissioner, incumbent, it's because he's serving out the remainder of Luke Ahmet's term ahead of the election. So mm-hmm. with Korn on the commission, all that said, it was interesting. The votes came down a little bit unexpectedly, I guess, from our perspective. You know, Williams made motions to lift a lot of these standing rules.
Mm-hmm.
Which she has never liked. She opposed them when Commissioner Ahmet put them in place a while back. Some of those things were related to public comment, which has been a running battle on the commissioners for more than a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But Korn actually didn't vote with Williams on a couple of those things, which I think we were kind of expecting that he would.
Yeah.
And then asked later by Sansaray, you know, why, he said that, well, you know, Commissioner Williams didn't file the proper paperwork to put these motions on the agenda, so I didn't feel comfortable voting for it, which was a little bit ironic considering that was one of the complaints that a lot of, you know, that Ahmet and Bradshaw made about previous motions. So in a sense, you know, we saw a very different kind of commission as we have, you know, sort of mood-wise, like the vibes were much different.
Yeah.
But some of the issues were the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're probably going to see, you know, more of that until January. Who knows what it's going to be like after the election, because we have contested races for both those District 1 and District 3 commissioners.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Korn may or may not be elected.
Right. But he's running against Glenn LaFay,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right, for
mm-hmm.
District 1.
Mm-hmm.
And District 3, it's Brian Domke and Steve Johnson.
Steve Johnson, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Corn isn't guaranteed to retain that seat, but you know it'll be interesting to see in January what happens. So it's kind of it's different, but more of the same, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. The Trestle Creek comment period closed. Now I know that's another Sansaray story, but
right.
I guess we don't know what's going to happen there. We're just kind of in wait and see there as well.
Yeah. This just goes back and forth and back and forth. One thing to note though is. As this was pointed out, I think, by some commentators, and you know, we've heard about this from folks, is that characterizing the project as the Trestle Creek project is a bit of a misnomer, insofar as the project site is actually not in
on the creek.
It's near,
right?
And
good
so,
point.
And so we tried to kind of clarify that a little bit because I think that does get lost in kind of the shorthand. And of course, that's the center of the big concern for a lot of
Trestle Creek's the center of concern about the whole project. Yeah.
So whether or not the development will affect Trestle Creek is the big argument. You know, with the project representatives saying like, no, I mean it won't. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, Sandpoint Mayor Jeremy Grimm, working in his sort of consultancy field, representing the developers, has pointed out multiple times. You know, that there are aspects of the project that are intended to not only, you know, not harm Trestle Creek, but actually to enhance the ability for, you know, the fish to navigate through that area. Now, whether or not people believe that is also part of the big argument that is going on. And I think what's going to happen is we're probably just going to keep reiterating, you know, points on both sides. But it's nice to hear that we potentially could have a ruling by mid-November, which is kind of new. We didn't really know that prior to that meeting.
Yeah.
And did they make some changes or adjustments to the proposal, right?
Yeah, it's been changed a couple of times over the years, and I think in response to, you know, feedback and various rulings and various agencies. Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, I'm trying to find exactly where we list all those changes.
Yeah, I'm looking for
What Jeremy says, you'll note that the proposed docks improvements in residential lots are further away from the mouth of the creek than the existing built-up marina. That's to the south. So now it incorporates seven private homes with individual docks, which would add a lot more commotion to. The big concern here is that how it's going to affect the fish that that use Trestle Creek for spawning, and they come up the creek, and will a bunch of development there. You know, impact them, and of course, that's a main concern from the folks that are opposing the development there.
Well, and the folks who are opposing it, including the Idaho Conservation League, you know, they say they're pretty confident that, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service will agree that this is too much development activity, even if it's not like in the mouth of the creek. You know, they're confident anyway from their side that Fish and Wildlife Services will say, even though it's not, you know, literally sitting in the middle of the creek, that level of development and shoreline disruption and, you know, just like, as you say, commotion is going to be too much to be, you know, allowed under the current sort of protections for these fish species.
Yeah, for the bull trout.
But we remain, I mean, we have to wait and see if that's true. I mean, we don't know that that's going to be the case.
Well, we have a couple minutes. We could talk about the upcoming forum, which is next Tuesday. Are you going to be there, Zach?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Sansaray and I both will be there. We'll be covering it, and then we'll have a recap that week.
Yeah. I imagine Ben, the publisher, Ben Olson, will be on stage moderating the forum, I expect. Usually that's his – he's standing there. I guess I'm looking at you both there.
Yeah. Well, it could be Ben, could be me. We flip a coin over sometimes that, actually.
Okay. Well, that would be fun,
Chris. I prefer my job. I like to sit in the audience and just take the notes. I don't want to be on the stage.
Yeah. I hope when everybody will come, it's just the second forum, the Daily Bee and, of course, KRFY broadcast it, had a forum on October 2nd. And so folks that miss that forum, this is their opportunity to catch it. Or if you're a political junkie and you just want to keep checking what the candidates have to say, then you want to come to this forum as well. And the forum format is such that we invite the folks in the audience to pose the question. So if you have questions for the candidates, whether you favor or oppose them, and come and hear what they have to say.
Mm-hmm. Cards will be available. You can basically write down your question, and Ben will address the or yourself, Chris. Yeah, so. One of you will.
the moderator will, or we organize the questions. Yeah. We usually get a bunch of questions on the same issue, so we try to, you know.
Yeah, put it together.
Put them together, mm-hmm. and give the candidates a chance to speak to that particular issue. And there is, we have not gotten it together, but it would behoove us to try to get somebody to speak for and somebody to speak against the Open Primaries Initiative and have mm-hmm. a bit of a contrast on the two different sides on that. The Open Primaries Initiative is Proposition 1. It's going to be on everybody's ballot. And that's gonna be a big sea change should it pass. And what do you think? What do you read the tea leaves on Proposition 1?
Oh, I mean, I am drinking tea right now, and I'm looking in the bottom of my cup, and I feel like it's got a good shot. I don't know that people were really super confident that the Medicaid expansion ballot initiative would pass. Couple of years back,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I think the ground game that the coalition has run has been really effective. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in the state who doesn't know about this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the first step in a citizen's ballot initiative, is everybody who's a citizen needs to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And based on the yard signs I see everywhere, this area is especially aware of mm-hmm. of what this issue is. And if you look at our letters to the editor, every other one is about Prop 1, mm-hmm. and most of them are in favor, not to say that we haven't gotten letters that are opposed to it, but I feel like it's got a better chance than maybe some people do. And what's going to be really interesting is, if it passes, what the Republican caucus will do, because I've read reporting out of Boise from the Idaho Capital Sun and others that there's already been sort of a promise that they'll try to repeal it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And of course, they tried to do that with the Medicaid expansion initiative as well. But I mean, it's really hard to make that point, philosophically and politically, that you are a party for the people and that you believe in, popular sovereignty in some sense, and, not big government telling people what to do, and then turn around and, basically repeal the literal voice of the people.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a debate, I'm sure, that will dominate the legislative session should the initiative pass.
Mm-hmm.
If it fails, I could definitely see it coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Another try?
Yeah. I don't think that they're done with this effort. I mean, just based on the sheer number of volunteers they had, the number of signatures they gathered, the groups they were managed to sort of bring together from across the political spectrum. I mean, there's a lot of chatter among some folks that this is a bunch of out-of-state, out-of-whatever, outside.
It's pretty grassroots.
Yeah. I mean, we've got, Idaho veterans. We've got, Mormon Republican women for Ethical Government, I think, was the name of the group.
Yeah. I think a lot of money is pouring in as well to oppose it. So,
right.
mm-hmm. We live in a time where state politics get magnified by a lot of the things that are happening nationally. Hmm. Well, I think we're about at our time here.
We are. It is 8:30. It's time to roll things over. Again, the forum on October 15th on Tuesday. You can tune in right here to 88.5 KRFY, or however you're listening to us on the internet or wherever. You can tune in, and we will be live from Sandpoint High School broadcasting that candidates forum, the last one currently scheduled before the election, right, for candidates in our area.
And I will say that KRFY, mm-hmm. we're broadcasting interviews with the candidates side by side as they mm-hmm. come in the studio for all the contested races. And the Reader has a voter's guide, are you calling it, coming out?
Well, we published a guide sort of to what's on the ballot last week.
Yep.
And we're planning a candidate's questionnaire for this coming week. So mm-hmm. you can go to the forum and then, enjoy that. And then on Thursday, you can pick up the paper and you'll see a candidate questionnaire with all of the candidates in contested races.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to note real quick here, I just realized that I misspoke earlier when I was talking about the county commissioners.
Okay.
So I think I might have said that Ron Korn and Glenn LaFay are running in the District 1 race, and that is not true.
It's District 3.
District 3.
Mm-hmm. Yes. District okay. 3. Yeah, we should have caught that, actually.
It's Ron Korn and Glenn LaFay.
We should have fact-checked you right
well,
there.
Well, you know, I had a feel, like, I said it, and then I was like, you know, that didn't sound right. And District 1 is Steve Johnson and Brant Donkin.
Yes.
Just to make that perfectly clear.
But everybody votes on all candidates.
Right.
So whether you're in those districts or not, you do have a vote.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Will the reader be making endorsements of candidates?
We have a almost 20-year policy of not endorsing candidates.
Yeah,
we will endorse issues,
mm-hmm.
and as we have in the past, I unendorsed a candidate one time, John Reuter. One of our co-founders.
I
disendorsed him in his own newspaper when he was running for city council about 15, 18 years ago.
What does that mean?
Didn't pay off though.
You opposed him?
I wrote in the editor's note, do not vote for John Reuter for city council.
I remember that.
And you know, nobody listened to me, and he went on to serve on city council, and he was even the city council president. So obviously.
That was a tongue in cheek.
I don't know. Yeah. I was actually pretty serious. I wanted him to work at the paper. I didn't want him spending all of his time at City Hall.
Yeah.
I'll just make an interesting comment here. You can respond or not. The North Idaho Voter Services does make endorsements. They're probably the most prominent nonpartisan, non officially aligned group. They made endorsements for all of our local races except for that District 3 race. And they did not endorse either Korn or LaFay for District 3, which I thought was interesting. They took a position on all the other ones. That's in your paper, right? That advertisement right on the first page.
We'll have to find out why they didn't endorse that race.
I'd be curious,
That could be a forum question, perhaps.
It could
Indeed.
Be.
Okay. Let's proceed with our day here on the radio. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. Zach, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We already know what's going to be in next week's paper.
Still pick it up.
Do read it. Yeah. I mean, well,
we don't know what all those subjects will have to say, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that'll be good. And we hope to see you all at the forum, or at least tune in and listen in. Here's a little John Hyatt to kick off Otto's Eclectic Mix today. Thanks for listening to Panhandle Community Radio.